This is the Business Report with Gary Struble on Nova 103.5.
Welcome to it. It's Thursday evening. We can feel the hints of chill arriving in the mornings and the evenings, and you should already maybe be thinking about getting those cardigans out. But the world of business never stops, and it doesn't change season. My name's Gary Struble, and this is the Business Report. And for the next hour or so, we'll be taking you around the world of business, both here in Namibia as well as in Southern Africa. Coming up in the show this evening, in our lead story, we'll be talking to the head of cryptocurrency unit company CBI Exchange, a story that broke this week, Connie Buerta suing the Bank of Namibia. In our spotlight, Sonia Kutzer from Salt IT tells us how she made her bones in the very hard world of IT. We'll be catching up with biz news, lots of crazy stuff coming out of South Africa. We'll be looking at mining in our market watch. And then we'll also be taking a look at the Business Rescue Task Force that President Hage Geingob put together. They handed over their report, and we'll be looking at that and a couple of other bits and bobs. Right now, though, let's get into the business flash briefing.
Rebuilding the economy starts now. RMB Namibia Corporate and Investment Banking, proud partner of BizNews.
With your BizNews, I'm David Bishop. Opening the two-day Namibia 4th International Energy Conference on Wednesday, Minister of Mines and Energy Tom Elwindo said Namibia is not contradicting itself by embracing both fossil and renewable energies, saying we should be allowed to use the resources in the energy sector that can generate revenue while embracing renewable energy. Old Mutual is proposing a new empowerment transaction that will lift black ownership in the insurance giant from 25 to over 30%. The insurer wants to issue approximately 205.3 million new Old Mutual shares in the new empowerment transaction, named Old Mutual Bulatsela, which means pave the way in English. The new shares will equal about 4.36% of Old Mutual's issued share capital. Tesla Inc. surged past Wall Street estimates for quarterly revenue and profit on Wednesday as the electric vehicle maker raised prices in response to inflation, offsetting the impact of a Shanghai factory shutdown. There are concerns, though, that CEO Elon Musk may sell some Tesla stocks or borrow against additional Tesla shares to finance his $43 billion bid to buy Twitter. And heads of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank warned on Wednesday that rising interest rates are squeezing the world's poorest countries as they struggle with the coronavirus and soaring food prices, with World Bank President David Malpass saying that the debt crisis is a topic of extensive discussion at this week's spring meetings of the World Bank and IMF, already dominated by other daunting issues, including the war in Ukraine, the coronavirus pandemic, and a slowing global economy. Taking a look at your latest financial indicators, the Namibia dollar is trading at 15.03 to the US dollar, 16.30 to the euro, and 19.63 to the British pound, while one Bitcoin currently costs $628,339.87. Gold is trading at $1,957.27 a fine ounce, while Brent crude oil costs $107.25 a barrel. I'm David Bishop. Stay tuned for more updates.
A sudden storm shouldn't disrupt your long-term outlook. Access RMB's flexible short-term liquidity. Rebuilding our economy starts now. RMB Namibia, a division of First National Bank of Namibia Limited.
Gary Struble on the Business Report.
Time now for the lead story here on the Business Report, and the lead story is brought to you by Alex Forbes. Alex Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future. Now, an interesting story that broke in the last week or two, and that is that the Bank of Namibia is being sued for 500,000 Namibian dollars per day from the 4th of March by the head of the cryptocurrency unit company CBI Exchange Namibia. His name is Connie Buerta. He's also suing the bank for 5 million Namibian dollars for his private capacity after the bank froze all its assets and accounts. The case continues before Judge George Coleman, who ruled that the assets should be partially made available again under the supervision of the bank. Buerta says everything must be made available so that the business can continue. Angie Skoltz caught up to Connie Buerta.
According to you, is dealing in cryptocurrency in Namibia illegal?
I'd like to know where in the law does it say it's illegal. And that's the first thing. The second thing is CBI has got a VASP license, which entitles it, issued by the FIC. It's an international organization, which entitles you to do that on, it's a digital license. So Bonus published an opinion paper, I think in 2018, where they tell the public that crypto is not legal tender. But it doesn't mean you not to own it. It doesn't mean that you can't buy and sell it. It doesn't mean that it's forbidden to have cryptocurrencies. It's an opinion paper. What it is, an opinion. It's not a law. There's no law forbidding ownership of cryptocurrencies or trading in it.
What would you like to see come out of the case?
I would love, first of all, to have our bank accounts unfrozen. And secondly, I would have loved to have the person in the street to realize that the tremendous amount of value that is in cryptocurrency and blockchain. Blockchain is the future development for any nation. And the countries that's not jumping onto the bandwagon of blockchain and the application of blockchain and those things that goes with it, they're going to stay behind, very, very far behind. It's a system whereby there can be no corruption. It's a system whereby you don't even need auditors. So secure is the blockchain application system. It's a system that can be used in any form of any administration or system or whatever you want to do. You can put your voting system on a blockchain. You can put your home affairs ministry on the blockchain, your health ministry, anything. And it secures everything within through a chain of confirmations that's fed through a ledger. That is what it is. Now, cryptocurrency is a byproduct of that. That's the first thing. The second thing is, once a government or a place has adopted that, then you will also see that you will not have runaway inflation rates where a government is restricted to the amount of currency that they issue. And that's what the poor man in the street does not know. Instead of closing people's accounts and freezing them up, rather form partnerships and find out how these institutions can assist you and help you.
Then why do you think that crypto is not being adopted in Namibia?
Because of a lack of knowledge by the people that make decisions regarding this, and because of the treaties existing between the country and other countries. But if you look out, you'll see that there's a huge resistance towards cryptocurrencies by central government. The reason for it is, first of all, they do not know how to employ it and apply it. And there are other political reasons which I do not want to discuss here, because I might say things that will offend some people very badly. What I can tell you is that El Salvador has adopted Bitcoin as legal tender last year in, I think, September. And since then, that country's economy is growing tremendously. Just the tourism thing has picked up at 26%. There is so much corruption in normal funds and monies that I can understand to some extent why people do not want to consider it. But Bonn has now announced they look into adopting a centralized digital token for the country, which is a good move, a very good move, if that is what they are going to do. How long it will take them to implement it, it's everybody's guess.
And then just a final question. If they finally accept it, what would it mean for the country?
It'll make a huge change for the country. And first of all, 60% of Africa's people are unbanked. The moment when you move into cryptocurrency, you can get them all banked in a matter of a few months, where people can make instant transactions and payments between two people at a fraction of the cost of what the banks charge them, doing it online from a telephone to another telephone. You don't need a bank account to do business. The guy in the street will be able to commercialize his whole environment. You know, anybody can create a business from his own. And this is what the basic elementary requirement is for a nation to grow its economy, is to get as much as possible small and medium enterprises, people that start up their little businesses from scratch with next to nothing.
That's Kuni Buerta, the head of the cryptocurrency unit company CBI Exchange Namibia. To find out more about cryptocurrencies in general and why central banks seem too wary of, I also got in touch with Brian Turner, a senior data analyst at Worldwide Works in South Africa.
Why do you think banks are not allowing cryptocurrency to be used?
Cryptocurrency is a 12-year-old way of transmitting payments over a new digital platform using the blockchain. And this platform enables one to move money very quickly, much faster than the traditional bank systems across countries. Another added benefit that it has for most people is that it makes their money not sovereign to one nation. And you can see now why this is going to make a lot of banks scared, because a lot of their control is removed in the process of people moving their whatever currency they have, let's say Namibian dollars, to assets like Bitcoin and Ethereum. A lot of nations are scared, and it's not just Namibia alone. A lot of countries around the world have limited or prohibited the amounts that one of their citizens can move to cryptocurrency. So now I see that over 4,000 Namibians have had their accounts frozen because of these cryptocurrency investments.
Do you think cryptocurrency is actually a safer way to make money and that it shouldn't be seen as illegal?
Cryptocurrency can be safe, but the problem with cryptocurrency is that it's had a bad rap by being used by cyber criminals. And that's where it comes into play. When a lot of people's computers get locked up with ransomware, the first thing they need to pay in is via Bitcoin. And that's given Bitcoin a very, very bad name. It can be a safe way to move money across countries, but because of its fluctuations in price relative to the fiat currencies, it's not a very great short-term investment. So one would really have to be in it for the long term.
And then a last question, could this be the way of banking going forward?
Cryptocurrency could be the way forward for banking. The banks really do need to get on board with these kinds of confirmations because the current banking systems are known for being slow, especially across banks. And when one thinks about money in itself, it kind of is a prohibitive factor for many users to say, well, why don't I just go and draw the money and have it in my hand? And that's taking one step back. Especially when one wants to transfer currency across provinces or across states. I mean, cash is really not an option, and citizens are at the mercy of what the banks have at their offer. And that can sometimes be hours or days.
That's Angie Schultz talking to Brian Turner from Worldwide Works in South Africa. We'll keep our eyes on this crypto space as it evolves. That's this evening's lead story, brought to you by Alex Forbes. Alex Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future.
It's the Business Report with Gary Struble. Namibia's business leader on Nova 1035.
The Business Report Spotlight is proudly brought to you by APS, Africa Personnel Services. We work for you.
I'm speaking today to Sonia Kutze, the MD and previous ops manager at Salt Essential IT. Good day.
Morning, David. Thank you for having me.
So let's, well, maybe not right at the start, but let's go back quite a ways, I suppose. Or that might be a bit rude to say quite a ways, but you went to the Walvis Bay High School.
Yes, indeed I did. I was a matriculant of 1990. They still want me back there. Apparently, I left a few things behind.
So from someone from Walvis, and you're now obviously up in the sort of dry central interior, what do you prefer, the coastal climate or is Windhoek more to your suiting?
I'm a hybrid. You know, there are times when the weather at the coast, the atmosphere at the coast just does it for my soul. And sometimes it's Windhoek or like this weekend, you know, down Gamsberg into Spreetshoogte. I think it's the moment that dictates what the soul needs.
And Namibia gives you that. I mean, we've got so many different sort of climactic zones and experiences, and you can live an entire life just traveling around this country and be in 20 different countries.
Exactly. So I really still want to go up deep north, you know, all those beautiful places. I've got a friend that used to work in various lodges up there. And my husband, every second week, I get a photo of him sitting next to the river. It's like, and yeah, thank you.
So to go back to high school, you said 1990. I mean, technology, if we look at where we are today, technology in 1990 was relatively still in its infancy. Were computers a feature in your life back then already?
Yes, but not as readily available as it is to the youth today. I mean, it was such an expensive commodity, and pen and paper was still the thing of the day. Everybody was comfortable with it. Some businesses had it, some didn't. You know, some of my friends had computers and smart computing games and things like that. And it was always fascinating. You know, for me, the interest really came when I was exposed to it from a working environment. And then I got to work on a computer. And then I realized, but there's so much more to this. I'm totally in love with technology, and I'm so in love with what it can do for everybody. But yeah, back in the day, I was not that fortunate. I think the best technology piece I owned was that handheld Donkey Kong game.
Well, date myself as well and say I remember that too. So walk us through then. I mean, from, as you say, the, you know, technology wasn't as readily available, and now you're running one of the premier technology companies in Namibia. What happened in the intervening years?
In the beginning, I was falling around a bit, you know. It was, I started in a company in Namibia that's still around today using a cardexing system, a little cart where you do the stock in and out and you've got a telly. And then the fax machine. Oh, my God. Yeah, you could send somebody the front page of a magazine and they'd get it, you know. I think the real love was 95, 96, when I worked for another technology company. And together with my colleagues, we got to build some machines. And you saw how all the parts fit together. And then it just went from there. Every next exposure was just more and more of a love. You know, I stepped out for a short while and realized, no, you know, technology is where I should be. It's where I belong. It's a passion. It's a passion. You can't break free from it. It just grabs you.
So you were previously the operations manager at Salt as well. How does the day-to-day differ between being the MD and being the operations manager? Which one gives you more free rein with that technology that you love?
I think as the operations manager, it was very much internal looking, as opposed to being in the MD position where I have my internal role, my internal responsibilities, but I get to explore what's out there, what's next, what should we be looking at for Namibia, what exists that we can do better. And then sit together with the team and decide how are we going to make it happen. I think some days there's some of the MD tasks that just, you know, can I sit underneath the table and wait for this to pass? but then there's days that are so exciting. You know, you stumble on a new piece of technology and you say, wow, if this was in Namibia, the difference we could make. For instance, on LinkedIn last week, they had this flat piece of technology, almost like a plastic that you can bend. And they put it over your knee or over your arm, and it helps the medical staff find your arteries should you get an injection, donate blood or whatever, instead of them having to try and flick your arm or poke you till you blew. And that's amazing, the difference it can make in so many people's lives. I've got a friend currently suffering from cancer, and she had to go for a lot of blood work. And after the fourth attempt, they still couldn't find an artery to withdraw sufficient blood to do the necessary tests. This piece of technology could have helped her, you know, could have made it such an easier journey. So, yeah, I can carry on for hours.
Well, I want to touch more on that outward-looking role in a little bit, but I first want to dig a little bit deeper into who you are. So I've seen you're a Formula One fan.
Yes.
And a part-time artist.
I wouldn't say an artist. I would say a professional doodler. So Who am I? I'm a 49-year-old mom and grandmother. I love doodling art pieces. I love writing poems when the time hits me. Love going into nature. Love Formula One, especially now. And this year is even more interesting than last year. And also to see the role of technology in Formula One, you know? That's amazing. So, yes, I'm a wife of almost 30 years one of these days. So,
congrats.
Thank you very much. Just an all-rounder. I believe you should be open, you know? The more open you are, the more information you get, the more like-minded people you find, the more not like-minded people you can have very good conversations with. So, yeah, just a general all-rounder with a small glass of wine at the end of the day.
Got to have something. I mean, that small glass of wine, I was going to say, presumably the doodling and the poetry also help for those days when you want to climb under the desk and get away from it all.
Absolutely. You have to have an outlet, you know. I'd never forget, it was in the 2000s, a motivational speaker, Ken Annandale, was in Namibia, and he spoke to a whole room full of secretaries. And he said, you know, I can motivate you for a day, maybe an hour, maybe 2 days. But if you don't have something within you that brings you back, that brings balance into your life, that makes you happy, then there's not much more I can do for you. And these outlets just really does it. It's so much fun.
Speaking of outlets, a lot of people's outlet is music, of course. And part of the Spotlight interview is that you get to choose a song that we play. And so, yeah, you can tell me what song you've chosen and why.
The Lost Opera by Chimera. Friends of my parents... The guy was really into some nice classical music. I've always had a love for classical. And there was the song, you know, and it's 80s vibey. It's opera. It's singing. It is tech music. It's smart music work behind it. It's just so, it's still my go-to song today if I need a pick-me-up.
Well, there we go. Part two of today's Spotlight interview, and we're speaking to Sonia Kutzer, the MD and previous operations manager at Salt Essential IT. So we said earlier that we're going to delve a bit into the outward-looking role of the managing director of Salt. I know you were a guest speaker recently at UNAM's Namibian Women in Computing's Entanglement with Green Hydrogen event. Green hydrogen, of course, one of those technological innovations we are hoping will do a lot for Namibia. What was it like appearing on that panel with all of the other distinguished speakers?
Wow, it was so amazing, you know, because they are all well-learned friends. And, you know, green hydrogen is a hot topic right now. And I think for me, the honor was not speaking about the technology. It's one of the things I need to go pick up at Walvis Bay High School, you know, the science marks and results. It was more about women's role, you know. Sarah White, a senior writer for CIO magazine in March of 2021, said that although women representation in IT or ICT has drastically increased, we still outweigh 2-to-1 by men. Mm. If you take it from 2021 as well, only 19% of employees and executives in the top 10 tech companies in the whole world is women. So it was really about speaking to these young ladies that has chosen ICT and science as their field of study, to encourage them to step up to the plate, to join the table, to claim their rightful voice in the contribution that they can make towards technology and science.
And we speak about those STEM subjects and women being sort of outnumbered. What do we need to do in Namibia to encourage more young women to sort of pursue STEM subjects?
I think the main thing is to help them understand what the opportunity within themselves is. About a year ago, one of the things I had a challenge with in Salt is I can get as many females or males or anybody else into the company. The thing is, you have got natural skills. So to develop those natural skills is easy. But if you don't have the skill set to develop something from it, it's very difficult. So I think the important thing for educators, for parents, for family members, for friends, is to encourage, most of everything, encourage people's natural skills and talent and tenacity. I remember being back at school way before 1990. I wanted to be a fireman. And the teacher said, no. You'll become a receptionist or a secretary. You're not made to be a fireman. Yeah, and I think if she looks at all the firewomen out there today, she's eating her words. Mm. We must stop labeling. We must stop categorizing, you know, and we should start encouraging from early onset. That natural talent, we should be developing it from day one. And that's how we'll get them there. And believe in yourself. If you don't believe in you, how can I? Mm. You know, I can tell you I believe in you. I can give you all the tools and opportunities. But if you don't believe in yourself, you're not going to take it up. Mm. No matter what people say, you know, we're in a shame culture and a cancel culture around everything. Ladies don't climb trees. We should do away with these things. And we should just encourage over and over.
Speaking to you today, I don't see that you sort of could not be taken seriously very easily, but, you know, talking about being outnumbered, as a female leader in a male-dominated industry, have you had times where you've had to fight extra hard to be taken seriously?
Yes, there have been times. Because of the traditional role of a female within this industry. But we've had some awesome tradition breakers. You know, one of my favorites is Dr. Massey. She is head penguin at IBM. She travels the world. She takes technologies into boardrooms and she takes it onto the street. You know, so yes, there have been times and you take the knock and you've got two choices. Crawl back from where you came or stand up and say, no, I've got a voice and I will be heard and I will contribute and I will make a difference. And that is what you have to do. If it's your passion, you have to stand up for it. You have to fight for it and you have to believe in it. And before you know it, you would be welcomed at the table.
Well, thank you so much for spending time with us, for telling us your story, and for hopefully encouraging some more of those young women out there to stand up, be taken seriously, and claim their rightful place at the table.
Thank you so much for having me, David. It was really exciting. It was an honor. And I do hope to see more young ladies and even the older ladies join the table.
The Business Report Spotlight was proudly brought to you by APS, Africa Personnel Services. We work for you.
The Business Report. Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5.
The Biz News Ramp is driven by the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology and comfort. Book your test drive today at MNZ Motors.
Every week we peer across the garden fence down at our southern neighbors and learn a little bit from the madness that ensues there as well. And that's with our publishing partners, BizNews, and Michael Apple joining me from BizNews. Michael, I said every week, but another crazy week in South Africa. Load shedding gone crazy again, and some really interesting stories on the site, more specifically about that, and titled How to Steal a Billion from Eskom. Tell us a little bit more about that one.
Thanks, Gary. Yeah, you know, the Eskom chief executive, Andre de Reiter, briefed the nation a few days ago. And I mean, there are a lot of questions from South Africans who sit for hours in the dock, businesses that are losing out on millions, the economy that's contracting as a result of all of this. You know, what is this? What's going on? Why is Eskom unable to keep the lights on? And in a very open and transparent manner, Mr. De Reiter actually pointed out that there is active sabotage going on, and that's by maintenance contractors who are deliberately putting hard objects, as he put it, into the mills, supplying coal to Eskom's power stations, causing breakdowns. And of course, there's a vested interest in that. If you can cause a mechanical or a maintenance issue, you get called out and you then get paid to fix it. So that is actively happening. This is not from some conspiracy theorist somewhere on some blog. This is from the chief executive of Eskom. And on top of this, we are told that the rampant thieving continues to plague South Africa. And this is by Eskom's own staff that managed to steal 1.3 billion rands worth of spare equipment that is needed to repair power stations. When units trip and things go wrong at power stations, you need a lot of spare parts, and those spare parts have been stolen. And so a couple of people have been arrested, but they know that the spare parts have been written off. That's been written off to the fiscus. It's been written off to the taxpayer. And that was at Tatuka Power Station. They simply can't find the spares anymore. So those spares have made themselves gone into the black market, have disappeared. And all the while, South Africans continue to sit in the dark. So it's not a great story, but at least, you know, we're getting a sort of open, transparent message now from Eskom yes, their fleet is aging. I think Andre de Reiter said the average Eskom power station is sort of older than 40 years old. But with this maintenance contract is deliberately sabotaging the network and Eskom employees stealing the spares. I mean, really, can we get a break here, Gary, please?
Well, they say the first, the best way to deal with a problem is first to acknowledge that there is one. And this, by all accounts, feels like the first public admission from someone in charge at Eskom that they do have a problem. And perhaps that is a way of pushing it into the light. So let's hope. Remember, we're also reliant on Eskom power up here in Namibia. And so far, our lights stay on, but that's only as long as the network stays up. Another story, COVID doesn't want to go away. Mask mandates in South Africa. So one judge in the United States saying that the CDC mask mandate for public transport is invalid, which has led to wild celebrations from commuters, not only in America, but in other parts of the world as well. Tell us a little bit about that story.
I don't know if you saw the video of Americans sitting on a flight halfway through taking off their masks and sort of dumping it in a bin that was being carried around by an air hostess. But that was because they were mid-flight when the U.S. District Judge Catherine Mizell declared that the Biden administration's COVID-19 mask mandate, especially on public transport, was just patently unlawful. So the mandate was exceeded. This is what the court ruled, that the mandate was exceeded the authority granted to the Center for Disease Control, the CDC, under federal public health laws. And it scrapped that nationwide mask mandate immediately. So certain companies, you can go check on the website, certain companies, Uber and Lyft, that's L-Y-F-T, not to be confused with South Africa's Lyft, L-I-F-T. They have immediately scrapped those mask mandates. Now, the interesting thing is what's going to happen in South Africa. There currently isn't a mask mandate if you are outside, but the second you go into a public space, you need to put the mask on. So it's really weird. I know you've spoken to my colleague Stuart in the past where you walk from the parking lot without a mask to get to the door of a restaurant or the entrance of a restaurant where you must then put your mask on to walk 2 meters to your table where you must then take the mask off to eat and drink. Like, it's such a bizarre Twilight Zone moment going on. But we just knew, what can you do? You shrug and laugh about it at the moment. But the national state of disaster, the mask mandate in South Africa, at least under current legislation, when that state of disaster goes away on the, I think, the 4th of May, it's then up to other draft health regulations, which are out for public comment at the moment, to whether or not that mask mandate, which is currently in place indoors in South Africa, is going to continue. So I know that there's a lot of pushback against this at the moment, but interesting story. We'll see how it develops.
And then you're talking about shrugging and laughing, and it's been a matter of shrugging and laughing for many investors looking at Naspat and then the spin-off process. And having to come to grips with the deep discount to net asset value in terms of their investments in Tencent. That story continues to dominate. Pete Fillion has some opinions on Naspers' failed closing discount strategy. Tell us a little bit about that.
So, counterpoint, Pete Fillion, my colleague and the editor here at BizNews, Alec Hogg, had a fascinating conversation. As you know, Gary, I'm by no means a financial journalist, but this one I had a particular interest in, and how it was possible that a share trades at 62%. That is now the discount. Naspers shares a 62% discount to the underlying value, and that's because of that the way or the interest that they have in Tencent. So, the overriding feeling from Pitbull Yun is there needs to be an unbundling, Tencent by Naspers, but whether or not that's going to happen is another issue altogether. But it's the shareholder, as you say, Gary, that suffers at the end. And of course, Naspers is such a forms part of very heavily weighted in the end indexes by asset managers. And I think Pitfall Yoon references this in the interview. You can go check it out on biznews.com in the article side, but on the video side, on the YouTube side, he speaks at length about how he, as a small asset manager, they got together and petitioned Naspers to unbundle from Tencent because it would be in the interest of shareholders. They were seemingly ignored, but he speaks about a seeming contradiction between these large asset managers, the three in South Africa, 91, Allan Gray, and there is another one, and Coronation. I think it's those three that continue to have Naspers as part of their index or part of their portfolio to a very large degree, and how there is a seeming conflict of interest there in some cases. But yeah, go check it out on the website. It's the shareholder who's getting a rough end of the stick here.
And of course, of interest to Namibians as well, many of the pension fund investments into the South African space would be exposed to that share. And given that it's so overweight on the JSE and performs such a big part of the top 40 as well, that any action by Naspers in that regard also has significant impact on tracking funds, ETFs, and a number of other instruments. So something to watch. Michael, thank you so much for the interesting stories this week, and keep your candles close and your torches charged, and we'll chat to you again next week.
Cheers, Gary. Thanks.
That's Michael Apple from BizNews, biznews.com. Go check it out. Publishing partners, all the interesting stories, that's on biznews.com. That's this week's BizNews Weekly Wrap.
The BizNews Wrap is driven by the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology, and comfort. Book your test drive today at M&Z Motors.
Gary Struble on the Business Report.
In our Market Watch this evening, we look at mining and the recently released 2021 Fraser Institute Survey of Mining Companies report shows that the country improved marginally on the Policy Perception Index, the PPI, by 0.94 points, but cites Namibia as being one of three African countries to improve on this score. Globally, Namibia improved on her overall PPI ranking, gaining 18 places from 47th last year to 29th this year. Namibia also ranked as the second most favorable jurisdiction on PPI in the African continent, a significant improvement from fifth in 2020. Morocco, the highest PPI score in Africa, and ranked first position. Angie Skoltz caught up with the CEO of the Namibian Chamber of Mines, Vesten Malangu.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Despite Namibia's improvement on the overall PPI index, there are some concerns raised in the report. Please tell us.
The concern is the one is related to the lengthy permitting process as a hindrance for project development. So basically, you apply for a permitting, basically it refers to everything starting from a mineral right. When you apply for an EPL, then you apply later on to the Environmental Commissioner for Environmental Clearance Certificate. All these, their concern is that it's taking longer than it should. That is true. I think we've got a lot of room for improvement there. But the other one, which they were talking of concerns around the non-deductibility of royalty, it's an erroneous statement because that is no longer valid in the last 2 years. And this is now our opinion at the Chamber is that if this, the second one, had not been raised, I think Namibia would have done far, far, far much better on the Fraser rankings.
The Chamber said they remain worried that while pronouncements by the government favour a conducive investment environment, there's no visible corresponding actions to demonstrate the finalisation of outstanding policy matters that continue to perpetuate investor uncertainty. Please explain, sir.
Yes, look, the previous Fraser reports, consistently, they have been talking of the major two concerns, really, for us in Namibia, is the issues around NIEF and NIPA. With the NIPA, there is quite some progress, but again, still not finalized. With the NIEF, I think you will agree with me that this has been on the table for a very, very, very long time. It is correct that our government is very serious to these two pieces of legislation, and all the pronouncements are actually showing that seriousness. What is lacking is that we are not seeing these two pieces of legislation being brought to finality. So we are at the chamber. We are eagerly waiting for that because with the empowerment framework, we have got a proposed mining charter, which we've provided to government, and we're still engaging government, basically finalizing the few matters that they've raised. But by and large, our sectoral charter is actually ready, just like the financial services charter and the retail charter. And these charters, our understanding of NIEF is that once NIEF is in place, these pieces of legislation and policy, particularly for NIEF, it will basically gazette again through a process that government will adopt. And these sectoral charters will be gazetted to be implemented under the NIEF. So we are basically looking forward to that happening, and we are not seeing it happen. So, but in the meantime, the pronouncements are very positive, but on the ground, we are not seeing the corresponding action. That is what that statement is all about.
Namibia's investment attractiveness index decreased by 7.13 points from 59.72 points in 2020 to 52.59 points in 2021. Why the decrease?
That one is a tricky one in the sense that we rely much more on the performance of others because the investment attractiveness index very much heavily relies on the mineral potential of a country. Now, the mineral potential is basically the mineral endowment. As we know it, the geological survey, the information they have about our resource in Namibia, that you cannot change much out of that other than when you increase, of course, exploration, then you have more knowledge of the mineral endowment of our country. So that we much more depend on the performance of others because really the geology of a country remains the same other than with more investments, then the geology becomes more better and better understood as we discover more minerals through increased investments into exploration. So you find we have got very little leverage in there. So we've got the low-hanging fruit where we can make a change and a huge difference to ensure that Namibia becomes the most attractive investment destination for mining and exploration on the policy front. And by the way, the policy front, in terms of investment decisions, it actually got in terms of investment decisions, it takes 40% weight. So investors who use the policy perception index, 40% to make that decision, and 60% is based on the mineral potential of the country. But again, the policy perception is actually the one that we have. We are in control, and we can ensure, and we are working together with government to ensure that we remain competitive because, as you know, mining is the backbone of our national economy, and we've got to make the investment here and the environment in Namibia as attractive as possible because we are all chasing the same investment dollars. Other countries are chasing, we are chasing, and investments, they tend to flow just like water. They tend to flow where there's a gradient towards favorable investment policies. And that's what we are doing at the Chamber in conjunction with the government.
Then just the last question. What does the ranking on the Institute mean in practical terms?
Yes, I think that's a very, very good question. You see, the Fraser Institute is a Canadian-based institution. The mining community, the investors worldwide, they consider the Fraser Survey reports as basically that's the guiding document that tells where to invest and where not to invest. So in the Fraser report, if you appear struggling, a country needs to get very, very worried. Because the impact of that is on the amount of investments that will come to your country or to the jurisdiction. And that's why the Fraser reports are a very big authority worldwide. So all investors, they are looking forward to look at the Fraser. So their decisions to invest anywhere in the world is heavily guided by the Fraser report, the outcome of this Fraser surveys. So that's why these surveys are very important. They should not be taken lightly. We should be, yes, it's a perception. It's an investor perception. Whether that perception is true, wrong, or right, as you can see, the other perception which was cited was a wrong one. It has dragged us down. And us being dragged down, we've lost some points, for which, as far as we are concerned at the Chamber, we should have been the best.
That's Angie Scholtz talking to Weston Malangu, Namibia, sitting in 29th place globally in terms of the Policy Perception Index. That's it for this evening's Market Watch.
The Business Report. Podcasts on nova.com.na. The Business Report. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Novo 1035.
Now, President Hage Geingob last year appointed a business rescue task force with the primary purpose of the task force to review business and insolvency legislation, laws, regulations, policies, and also make recommendations for amendments to these laws and regulations so as to rescue businesses in financial distress. Obviously, all hastened on by COVID and the massive impact that had on many, many companies. President Geingob last week received the final report and recommendations from the Business Rescue Task Force. Angie Skoltz caught up with Tinus Prinsloo, the chairperson of the task force, about the recommendations they've made.
It's been a journey of 9 months that we've studied, researched, and looked at many countries and how they treat business rescue as a process. I think at the core of it, we came up with three broad recommendations. The first one is around the legislative changes, which requires a chapter on business rescue in most of the different company type acts. So the Close Corporations Act, the Companies Act, Public Enterprises Governance Act, as well as at an individual level in the Insolvency Act, ideally the revised or insolvency bill that's currently in the pipeline. The second part was around funding and post-commencement funding. That's a key critical element of business rescue. And typically when a company gets into distress, it is as a result of cash flow. So there's some suggestions and recommendations around establishing a fund that can be used for different entities and funded by different parties, government as well as private sector, to participate in that. And then the third aspect is around some immediate business rescue initiatives, largely around cash flow improvements in the system. There's a big need to revisit the COVID relief programs that was launched by DBN as well as Bank of Namibia. And there's some recommendations on how to enhance those so that they can have a bigger impact. Currently, the uptake isn't very big. And I think then lastly, just at an overall level, it is about establishing a business rescue environment with practitioners and experts who know what they're doing that can help businesses. It is a fairly short process proposed. For example, within 10 days, that business rescue practitioner must come up with a plan to assist the business. So it's not a year process or even months. It's a fairly short process to have the right impact. And if a business do it at the right time, and that is typically having at least 6 months worth of cash flow still, most businesses can be saved. But if you wait too long, then no one can save it. And ultimately, we have all got a responsibility to try and protect the jobs and create more jobs. And hopefully this framework will create the legal environment within which more companies can succeed.
It's the Business Report with Gary Strubel. The Business Report. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Novo 1035.
I'm David Bishop with your weekly economics wrap. The Chamber of Mines of Namibia says that the 2021 Fraser Institute annual survey of mining companies accurately reflects the overall status quo of the current Namibian investment landscape, one which appears to be in limbo rather than improving dramatically. Namibia's overall score of 75.2 on the index, the Chamber says, indicates there is still much to be done to improve Namibia's policy landscape. Deirdre Kruger, the head of funding and liquidity management at Bank Fintuk, says that Namibians might have to brace themselves and expect rising interest rates throughout the course of the year. This, while the heads of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank warned on Wednesday that rising interest rates are squeezing the world's poorest countries as they struggle with the coronavirus and soaring food prices. The Namibia Ports Authority has announced that it will commence with the process of the proposed concession of the new container terminal in Walvis Bay to an independent operator. According to the Business Rescue Task Force, a lack of knowledge about the government's $500 million Namibian COVID-19 relief loan scheme for small and medium enterprises has hindered the maximum disbursement of the funds. And the FNB Residential Property Price Index posted a 12-month average growth of 7.1% at the end of 2021, up from 4.6% over the same period of 2020, while the 12-month average growth of the volume index dropped to 6.6% from 21.7% a year ago, leading to a dip in average house prices. Meanwhile, according to a report by independent property valuation firm Rode & Associates, it is highly likely that real house prices in South Africa will decline for the seventh consecutive year in 2022 and continue to decline for another few years to come. Staying in South Africa, a total of 1,054 new vehicles were sold in March 2022, an increase of 16.1% on an annual basis and 19.4% on a monthly basis. According to the National Association of Automobile Manufacturers South Africa, this is the highest number of vehicles sold since May 2019 and the first time since then that new vehicle sales have exceeded 1,000 units. Libya's National Oil Corporation has announced the closure of operations in major oil fields after staff in the key export terminal of Zuitina were blocked from working. New rules from the U.S. government are making sure manufacturers of federal projects use domestic construction items such as iron and steel as part of a push to make sure funding from the $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill sources local products. And finally, the Global Electricity Review 2022 revealed that for the first time, wind and solar generated more than 10% of electricity globally in 2021, up from 9.3% in 2020 and double the level of 2015 when the Paris Climate Agreement was signed.
Namibia's business leader on Nova 1035.
Great show. Thanks to all our guests for taking part, and some interesting stuff coming up next week as well. Stay tuned. We had our production meeting earlier this morning. Some big stories that Angie and David are chasing up. Remember, you can catch us on the website, nova.com.na. You can check out the podcast as well. If you missed a bit of the show or you'd like to send it on to someone or something caught your interest, then go to nova.com.na. Go to the Business Report podcast, and you can listen to it and all our previous episodes as well. Emails, tbr@nova.com.na. If you want to get hold of us or drop us a mail, let us know what you think, what stories we should be covering, or if you have a hot tip for us to break open the next big story, let us know as well. Thanks so much for listening. As always, thanks to our team, Angie Schultz, our producer, David Bishop, who gets his hands dirty all the time, and DJ Musketeer, our digital guru this evening, for putting the show together. Be safe, enjoy the winter as it comes on, and we'll catch you next week.
That was The Business Report on Nova 1035. Listen to all the segments and previous episodes with our podcast service on nova.com.na. The Business Report was presented by Gary Struble and produced by Limey Ilago and David Bishop. Comments and questions can be sent to tbr@nova.com.na.